Welcome to The Wagon, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
Welcome to another edition of the Waggle Podcast, brought to you by us here at the CFL, but brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips, known for their Sport Clips MVP haircut experience, which includes shampoos massaged into their scalp, hot steam towels, and sports on TV like hockey, baseball, basketball, and football. Oh, and of course, legendary haircuts. It's good to be a guy. It's good to be a Sport Clips guy. It's good to be able to talk about some football, Chez, because people have been constantly asking us an update on the season. What's happening? What's going to happen? And listen, we don't have an update for you because we don't really make decisions around here. We just talk. But luckily, one, we had an update for Randy Ambrosi. And for that, go to CFL.ca. There is an article on the update regarding 2020, a virtual town hall with the commissioner and Brody Lawson. And also, if you want to dive a bit deeper into it, Chris O'Leary breaks down his five takeaways from the commissioner's town hall. Davis, we are going to talk to Greg Dick, who is the CFO and head of football operations at the Canadian Football League, about how we got to the place we are and maybe what the future looks like. But first, what are your takeaways? What do you want to ask Greg Dick about what we've heard thus far?
Well, he's the guy, because you're talking about a guy that's looking over all the economic repercussions and situations, and then the health and the safety of the players, and how that plays into things. So a lot on Greg Dick's plate. And you've mentioned it, DJ. There's so many moving parts to this, and it changes every week. So kind of what the process is, and talk to Greg about how they're maneuvering through all this, the changes day to day and week to week, and where we stand right now as a league, and is there a chance we're going to play football? So lots to ask Greg, and I'm interested to hear what his thoughts are after the town hall.
Well, let's get to it. Without further ado, the CFO and head of football operations, Greg Dick, is next on the Waggle Podcast. We bring in Davis, someone that is well above our pay grade, fair to say, to give us some answers and give us an update. And so we're thankful that the CFO and head of football operations and a very good football player in his day, Greg Dick, joins us to give us an update on where we are, how we got to this place, and maybe how we'll move forward. First of all, thanks for joining, Greg. How are you doing, both professionally and personally, during this, you know, unprecedented time?
Yeah, thanks, Donovan. And Davis, thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's a busy time, guys. It's personally and my family, we're all safe and sound, all good. My boys are probably getting a little stir crazy. They're teenagers, so can't go and see their buddies too much right now. But everyone's safe and healthy. And from a business perspective, it's crazy. There's a lot of, as you know, uncertainty with our business, and a lot of scenario planning and what if scenarios. And you know, the challenge we have is we really don't know what's ahead of us, and that's the biggest issue we have.
And so for those who are not up to date, the announcement made via town hall by the commissioner was a couple things. One, unfortunately, to our friends out east, Touchdown Atlantic sadly will not happen this year. The other big change would be that to the 2020 Grey Cup, and Saskatchewan will move and host the 2022 Grey Cup. 2021 will remain in Hamilton, and the Grey Cup will be hosted by whoever wins and gets there and has the best record. And the other thing I should mention is that the announcement said that September at the earliest is when we might see some CFL football. And so, Greg, just take us through basically how you got to those decisions and why now in terms of when they're announced.
Yeah, sure. From a September start perspective, you know, it's BC, Quebec, and Calgary as a city have said that there's no large sporting events until at least September 1st. And so Obviously, that restricted us in three of our CFL markets. So that was dictated by the government, and so you know, other provinces haven't followed suit yet. But that was one of the issues we had to deal with. So September is the earliest we could get started, based on the government and health officials' restrictions. So that was you know, an easy decision for us. With that. With a September start, obviously we're going to have some form of a shortened season. And, you know, the challenges around having Grey Cup in Regina on November 22nd, which was the scheduled date, was, you know, we wanted to give ourselves, there's a couple of issues. We want to give ourselves some flexibility to get some type of season in, and with a Grey Cup pinned to that date, it challenged us to get enough games in, potentially with a September start. So that was one factor. The other factor, is the fact that obviously people aren't traveling right now, and people will be, hesitant to travel under the, you know, with coming out of this coronavirus issue crisis we're in. And so people, you know, probably wouldn't have been a normal Grey Cup, even if we could have held it in November. So that was another big factor for us, to changing the Grey Cup in Regina. And then flipping it to 2022 was pretty simple. Keep Hamilton for next year in 21, doesn't disrupt their Grey Cup planning, and it only disrupts one Grey Cup this year's, right? So we flipped them to flip the Saskatchewan Grey Cup to 2022. That made the most sense through all the clubs agreed, and the Grey Cup committee, as well as Saskatchewan and their organizers. So that was the reason there. The win and host model was, we talked about a whole bunch of different things around, you know, different scenarios around Grey Cup, but we thought this made the most sense. The top remaining seed in the playoffs from the regular season would host the game, whenever that may be. You know, probably in December at this point. But it guarantees people in that home city will go to the game, likely, right? You don't have to travel. Their home team is in. And so it kind of, you know, guarantees that we have a good crowd for the Grey Cup. So those were the reasons we got to that model. But yeah, Touchdown Atlantic was, you know, similarly, we had, you know, picked a game, a time in the season to play in Halifax for Touchdown Atlantic. Would have been Argo's home game. But with the uncertainty around when our season will start and what the dates will be, it's very hard to have an event, to pick a date for an event when we have no idea when the season will start and what dates we'll actually have for the season. So that was the challenge with Touchdown Atlantic, and instead of, you know, rescheduling it versus canceling it. So it was unavoidable, and the plan is to go back to Halifax and the Atlantic region again next year for sure. We're committed to Touchdown Atlantic in the future.
So I love the win and host model because it makes the regular season races more interesting. It gives franchises Definitely. A bit of an economic incentive to playing out and making sure you're winning as many games as possible. It also, you know, gives the teams the ability to give back to the local community economically. And if you do well, it's going to help the people that you serve in around you. But the first thing I thought when I heard that is, okay, does that mean that the model moving forward will be that there aren't hub cities, that you're not playing in a central location or you're creating some sort of biosphere, and that you're actually playing games in the markets? Are those things mutually exclusive, or am I reading too much into it?
Yeah, no, if we do a hub city, we, you know, the host, that model may not matter because we're in a hub. But we're hoping, like Randy said yesterday, we're looking at a number of scenarios because we really don't know what's going to happen. So, if we can have a season where teams play in their own stadium with or without fans, obviously with fans is our first choice, then that win and host makes sense, Donovan. But in a hub scenario, it really, we're going to be in the hub, right? You're going to be in the bubble. And that's another scenario that we'd have that we're looking at, as Randy said yesterday.
Greg, all of the planning, give us a little bit of a glimpse into some of this planning. This is, everyone has their roles in the league, previously at least, and now things have kind of changed because everyone's got to jump on board with this. I mean, is there an outside group that's come in and to assist with this? Is this you guys in the office with one big whiteboard just erasing off the things that won't work? Give us a glimpse into this, because unprecedented is the word that keeps coming up, and this is certainly that.
Yeah, for sure. No, Davis, we're not. Well, one, we're not getting together because we're not allowed to, right, with the social distancing. So lots of phone calls, lots of Zoom calls. Our executive team at the CFL, we talk every single day, probably multiple times a day. We talk to the presidents with the clubs, you know, twice, at least twice a week, sometimes more. There's a number of committees that have been broken off with that are a combination of the executive team at the CFL and team presidents. So and to answer your other question, we have not hired anyone outside. We're all doing it ourselves. So it's a combination of team presidents and executive office team, plus a few other people from the office, depending on the area of it's all hands on deck, like you kind of alluded to, Davis, and it's different than what we normally would do, but it's planning. So My finance team too, from a scenario planning and on the financial side. So I end up working with my team, but all the CFOs of each club as well, because each club's got to do their own financial scenario planning with the team president. So yeah, it's different, Davis, for sure. It's a lot of work, but.
Another question that keeps coming up. Yeah, at least a question for a lot of people who aren't involved, including myself. The numbers we hear for of a loss if we don't play a season versus playing a season, and I guess the question that I have and that I think many want to know is why is it such a big loss number? If we just turn the lights off and say let's return in 12 months when the economy is in a better place, when we have more answers to COVID-19, and essentially get back to what the league would most likely have looked like this year, versus playing in an empty stadium or with a lot of businesses not having the finances to be able to contribute to sponsorship dollars. What's the numbers in regards to that, or the numbers? But I guess why so many costs? Sorry, I can clear that up. Why so many costs and such a large number of loss if everyone's shut down and a lot of the expenses that we would have aren't going to be there?
Yeah. So the costs that we at each team incurs are mostly related to people, I'll be honest. So you got players costs, coaches costs, football operations staff costs at a club, plus all the business, all the other staff, tickets, sellers, other business administrative, business operations people. Same at the league. It's all it's a lot. Our highest number is staff costs, right? For the people that are employed. So in this scenario, every club, so when you talk about players get paid when there's a game. However, a lot of players have already been paid this year, signing bonus and roster bonuses. So good those point. Dollars have already gone out the door. There'll be additional bonuses paid if we start training camp. They're called sign and pass bonuses. Davis, you probably remember those at the time. And then those dollars have already been spent. Coaches are on contracts. A lot of the coaches, we don't know if we're going to have a season. We hope we have a season. So those coaches are still employed. All those football operations people are still employed. So we're now in late May, and people have been paid since January to this point in time. And we'll continue to be paid until we know if we have a season or not. And then their contract situation may mean, depending on the coach and the contract, may still have to be paid, regardless if we have a season. Depends on the employment agreement. Then we go to all the other business operations staff and clubs. Again, we're hoping we're going to be paid. There's been some clubs and the league office are trying to reduce people costs. But again, we're hoping we're going to have a season. It's hard to, you know, let people go and then ramp back up, but we might have to do that. The other option is, you know, everyone was trying to keep people employed. And so, you know, if we do have a season, or if we, God, worst case scenario, we don't have a season, we hope to have a season next year. Then you have to ramp up and start planning for the following year. So it's a real challenge for all, for each of the clubs in the league office to sort of plan how you manage your people costs. Some of those other costs, Davis, you're right, will go down to zero. We just won't do community programs at the club level and marketing and things like that, that you would normally do in a normal year. But there are still other costs that, that are there. The other big one that, that most, that every business has to pay, regardless if you're operating or not, are things like rent, insurance, IT costs.
Right.
Some of those overhead costs that, that you can't just cancel. Right. So office building, stadium rent, insurance. I'm in the middle of our insurance policy renewals that we're going to have to pay regardless, because the insurance companies don't give you a break just because there's a pandemic. I can tell you that.
Right.
So those are some overhead costs that you don't even think about that you still have to pay.
So one of the reasons for fighting, hard to get some semblance or some portion of the season played, Greg, are because a lot of money's already been paid from, you know, from January up until now. And
yes,
if with no games at all, we get none of that back, that's a massive loss. Plus, to your point, some of the contracts and agreements are going to have to be paid out throughout the year regardless. So that, I guess, answers the question for many who ask why that is. That makes good sense. And thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, no problem.
So having said all of that, is there a way that the season would be financially viable if you can't have fans in the stands?
Yeah, it's a good question, Donovan. We're trying to model this right now. you know, there's been lots of talk about, can you social distance in a stadium with a certain number of fans? It's very complicated because of the health regulations you have to talk about. So that's a very complicated scenario that we're looking at. No fans at all, and we broadcast games. We certainly would get some revenue from our broadcast deal from TSN, from sponsors. How much, we're still trying to figure out, and the logistics of a hub city, as Randy said, we're working through those. It's complicated because of there's been lots of stories about the other leagues trying to do this. It's complicated because of how you have to keep people in the bubble and the testing and the sort of monitoring of the players and everyone at the stadium, everyone at practice, you would have to do. So it's the financial viability of those other scenarios we're still trying to figure out, and it changes every week because of different things that the health organizations and governments give us, because you know, as time goes on, how often do you have to test people, how often do you have, you know, how many people can be together, and what's the social distancing and things like that. So it's I don't have a good answer for that question because it's so complicated, and we're looking at all of the options, but we don't know yet. What's, you know, like we said, like Randy said, I think we said it in our release, and it's literally true. We're looking at the safety and the financial viability of these scenarios.
Well, I suppose the challenge is that the information is fluid. It's changing day to day. It's changing in different parts of the country, and you're trying to put together this puzzle where the pieces are constantly changing. What would be a drop dead date in terms of when you would have to figure out a plan in this scenario for a shortened season to be possible?
Yeah, we're probably, like, if we want to start in September and you want to have a Grey Cup in, you know, early December, mid-December, something like that, like, we've got a few dates, like you said, it things are fluid, but it's going to be in August sometime, right? You have to activate enough time to, and we have to deal, and we have to work with the Players Association too, to give the players notice and enough time. So it's probably in August we have various dates in August where you have to activate to get it, to make the decision one to go, right? So that you can sort of have a training camp. Don't forget, right now, at this point in the year, we would have to, anyone crossing the border, anyone going to another province has to self-isolate for 14 days. So when you start to do the work back schedule of when you would start training camp and when you have to self-isolate in the location that they have to go to, that's why August is likely the month we have to make that final decision.
You mentioned potentially having games in December, which would not be new. You know, December 3rd was the last time we had a game in 1972. It's been as late mm-hmm. as December 11th in 1937. So that's not unique. But in terms of the consideration of moving the game into December, how far in December are we talking about? Could we have a Christmas Day Grey Cup? And are you thinking of December in terms of getting more games in or giving you more flexibility to start the season later?
Yeah, it was more about being able to start the season later. Is why we figured December is likely, or keeping our options open, so we'd go into December. In terms of how late we go into December, it won't go past mid-December. We want to stay away from just before the Christmas holidays. So we have a little bit of flexibility there, but it won't be on Christmas Day or around Christmas, for instance.
So some other leagues are starting to bring back employees, and in some leagues bring back players in small numbers. Is that something that's been talked about? Any chance that we see that happening at CFL venues?
Yeah, it's Ontario came out about a couple weeks ago. They said that professional teams could open up their facilities. I believe in British Columbia, there the government has asked for a plan. You have to get a plan approved to open up your facility. So we've talked about it. We are still in the preliminary stages of putting our phase one return to facility plan together. And the challenge, Donovan, is like there aren't a ton of guys in market right now. We did a survey of all the clubs. So what I foresee happening when we do this, and I think it could be in the next month. And I'm guessing we have to get these plans approved, and then I think you have to go by the provincial requirements, and then the municipality has requirements too to reopen facilities, and this is for sports and all sorts of other facilities too. You could see when we do get there, guys will then be able to go back and get therapy at the stadium under these restrictions, right? And social distancing and cleanliness and everything else. And I also and I could see them being able to go and potentially lift weights in their facilities. The challenge is going to be if quarterbacks and receivers and DBs want to get out there and throw the ball, run routes and things like that. I don't know if we're a month from that. I think on an individual basis, like what MLS has done is players are allowed to go back, but they have to train by themselves at their facility. And they have very strict restrictions on when and how, and testing them, checking their temperature, things like that, but they have to be totally by themselves. So that's the challenge you have, obviously, with football. You can do your training by yourself, but you know, throwing the ball, doing some other drills with a group of guys is not, I think, as close as we might hope. So it's going to come. But it's not, we're not quite there, because we have to make sure. Another issue we have is not all the provinces are on the same level in terms of allowing facilities to be reopened. So we may wait till everybody's ready at the same time to do it across the league.
The return to play model, whenever that's decided, is that something that has to be collectively bargained with the players?
Yeah, well, we'll. I don't know if it's. I wouldn't say collectively bargained, but we definitely have to get the players. We have to work with them to do it together, and make sure that they agree to the safety procedures and everything else. You know, it's a challenge for guys, because if you don't have a weight room in your house right now, they've only been doing you know, body weight exercises and other things, and they, you know, not access to a weight room. So them being in shape, you know, they probably are cardiovascular and anaerobically in shape because they can go out and run by themselves. But in terms of strength training, it's only really what you have at your house and body weight right now. So we do have to talk to them and come to an agreement on where they think guys will be. I guess the advantage we have, Donovan, is we're in May and we're talking about September. So we have a few months to, as things loosen from a restriction perspective, we're hoping that that guys will be able to get back to their normal training a little bit before we're ready to have our return to play. The other thing we have an advantage of is the NHL and NBA and MLS are all clamoring to get back, and we see Bundesliga in Germany's back. So we're going to follow their best practices and their experiences to adjust and modify our return to play, return to the facility, return to training, return to play plans, because we're going to be able to learn from them.
I know everyone wants to see the Grey Cup awarded, but in a shortened season, what's the fewest games that the league would consider making sure that, you know, the trophy's awarded and it doesn't really have an asterisk around it?
Yeah, we're looking at it, you know, around half a season at the minimum. You know, we've got various scenarios with nine teams, you have to do it by twos. So we've got various scenarios around an even number of games. So probably half is the minimum we've talked about. We've all the scenarios are on the table, but around half. I don't think we'd go less, so too far less than half, Donovan, for a legitimate season.
How much does a return to the league and to games being played is contingent on governmental support to help the league get through the certain challenges that it faces?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's going to be a really challenging year financially for every single club. Obviously, like what, you know, Davis asked me, there's going to be less revenues or no revenues in some cases, and we still have expenses. It's going to be important to be able to get some financing or some sources of funds, and if it's one level of government or another level of government, I think that's one option. Obviously, banks are an option, you know, but other sources of funds to raise money are going to be potentially another option. What we're trying to not do is, you know, some of our clubs, as you know, are community owned, so they don't have an owner to back them. Others have ownership, and so you're trying to, as a business, you're trying to minimize your loss, not maximize your loss, right? So that's the big question. Is it going to be totally contingent on government funding? I don't think we would say yes, but it's going to be a factor. That's a factor, and as we've, you know, Randy said and I've said already, the financial viability of one of these scenarios, right?
For sure. So the league, in many ways, is the caretaker for the game in the country, and I just wonder what your concerns would be for grassroots football, you know, given, you know, the uncertainties moving forward and, you know, the fact that minor league football in a way might be one of the last things to return. University programs in a large way lost their ability to fundraise throughout the spring. You are a big part of fundraising, you know, the football program at, you know, the best institution in the country at Western.
Yes, Donovan.
what do you foresee, you know, having experience at multiple levels in the sport in our country, being some of the challenges for football moving forward through the pandemic?
It's a great question. So I'm also on the board of Football Canada. I joined them in, as the CFL representative back in August. And so we just had a board meeting last night and board call, and across the country it's going to be a real challenge from a revenue perspective for them. too, because they earn their revenues on participation fees, like membership fees and joining leagues. The thing that I'm happy about on a grassroots football perspective is the provincial sport bodies that run football across the country are very strong, and they have good plans to get back, and they're going to start with simple stuff, Donovan, of doing like combines and drills and skills and drills type things where they can limit the number of kids and they can still keep them involved in football and the coaches involved. So I was really happy to hear that, because my concern was similar to your question. How are they going to survive? So thankfully we have strong leadership across the country and at those grassroots levels. Is it going to be a little bit of a stunt in the growth of participation in Football Canada? Yeah, for sure. It's a stunt in the growth of every business and organization in our country, but it's not going to die. And I'm really happy to have heard what's going on across the country. And then everyone's optimistic. Once we get back to normal, we're going to push play on the plans we had for this year to grow football. And that's one of our big strategic initiatives at not only at the CFL, but obviously at Football Canada and across the PSOs, the provincial sport bodies across the Canada. So I think we'll survive. I think it'll be a pause in the growth, but it'll be fine. On the university side, it's a real challenge. You're right. I talked to Greg Marshall a lot, head coach at Western, for the Western Mustangs, about the challenges they're going to have. At Western, I sit on the board at Western as well, and at the board level at Western, they're planning to still have students on campus, maybe in some hybrid model. Wynn University of Windsor just came out last week and said they're not going to have students on campus. And Queen's University, where my son goes, begrudgingly, I wished he went to Western, as you would think, Donovan, but they haven't decided yet what they're going to do with online only. And so how does that challenge university football across the country? It's a big issue. If you're only doing online, are they going to allow varsity sports, football and others, to actually compete in some restricted manner? If the question is up in the air. And they're talking in the OUA, I know for a fact, about a shortened season for football this year, maybe less travel, maybe splitting the Ontario conference into two so that they're not, sort of Western Ontario and Eastern Ontario, and they only play within each other. So there's less travel, less risk. So they're looking at a lot of scenarios, but if they don't play, they have the same issues on revenue as similar to the CFL, because they'll get less attendance and they get less money from other, if they don't play games, they don't get certain funds, sources of revenue. And one of the issues that's come up, and I'm probably going to be talking to the athletic director at Western because she wants to pick my brain on if they may reduce student fees for athletics, because students won't be on campus in the fall semester. So it's a real challenge, but the thing I'll say about the university coaching network that I know, and is they're resilient, and I don't think they're going to let football die. I think that it'll be a real, it'll be disappointment if they can't play a season, but I think that with certain return to play and certain aspects of it, I think the training ability to continue to train but not play will keep the flame alive, keep the flame going, and you start to plan for next year. Another scenario I've heard, and I haven't heard this firsthand, I've heard this secondhand from one of the guys on my team, is that they're thinking about having a spring league. I don't know if you guys have heard that, but in youth sports football, they're thinking about playing in the spring and having, that's when they have their season. So then they buy some time, right, to get through this virus. I think it's a great idea. They obviously have spring camp, right?
Yeah.
So it'd be probably an abbreviated season. They've already been talking about not having a Vanier Cup this year because of the travel restrictions they may be under. If you can get some playing in, I think it's a great idea. Obviously, for us as at the CFL, if they can get a spring league in, guys that are draft eligible next year would obviously get some playing time, and there's another evaluation period and a development period for those athletes to get drafted in the CFL and keep football moving forward.
That's very interesting. That would mean
Do you like
season.
That, DJ? I like that.
I mean, listen, I like it more than no football, that's for sure. Yeah. And I would be very interested to see if maybe some TV partners would be interested in some additional spring content when you're not going head-to-head with the CFL and the NFL and the NCAA. But I'm thinking of the kids
DJ,
who are draft eligible.
That's, I suggest, DJ, you talk to your people. I'm going to talk to my people, and we'll see if we can make that happen.
I think Greg Dick talking to both of our people has much more sway than either of us.
But yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to pivot and end. And thank you, Greg, for your time and your candor.
Yeah, thanks,
you know,
Greg.
Businesses,
you're welcome.
Businesses across the landscape, forget about sport or entertainment, across the world are being forced to pivot because of their current realities, but because of what are going to be new realities whenever we come out of this. In what ways do you think the league has the ability to, you know, I don't want to say take advantage of this, but really capitalize and make sure that it's strong moving forward and pivot so that it can continue to thrive for, you know, 100 more years?
Yeah, it's a great question. And Randy alluded to it a bit yesterday. You know, we've already talked about it at the president's level that this is the time to reassess your business model, right? And how you run your business and how to be, you know, more efficient and, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe a little taking more risk into account, risk averse, right? You no one would ever have ever in a million years forecasted a pandemic crisis that we've had to deal with. So no one ever would be ready for that. But under these circumstances, how do you know, now you look at what you do and how you do it, and become more efficient and effective so that you can withstand maybe downturns a little bit better. I think that's a big learning that not only the CFL will have, but all businesses will have. And we've already started talking about it. And how do we make ourselves more bulletproof, if you will, and more resilient than we might have otherwise been. So I think that will be a big learning from this, Donovan, and make us come out of this a little stronger. And like you said, last for another 100 years.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing whatever happens with the league, not just this fall, but moving forward. Thank you for painting a picture on what you've done thus far and what work you continue to have to do. Certainly earning your pay and your title, CFO and head of football operations, with everything you're balancing with accounting and financials and operational functions and football questions. So we appreciate a small window into the things that you're juggling. Take care, Greg.
All right, guys. Thanks very much. Have a good day.
Lots of information there, Davis. Lots to dissect. It is going to be a fluid conversation. We also love the fact that Greg joined us for the conversation. We want to have the conversation with you as well. So hit us up on Twitter. Interact with us on our social channels, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Let us know what you think about maybe what return to play might look like. Davis, your initial thoughts are what?
Greg was good. I mean, he's obviously, he obviously cares, obviously has a lot going on. And, you know what? I actually left that conversation, DJ, with more hope than I had entering it. So that's a good thing, and to know that there are scenarios that would be viable and potential, and that's all any of us can ask for right now. Any of us who are hoping for some semblance of a season.
Yeah, it is nice to have some optimism, because a lot of the news we've been hearing, whether it's sports or otherwise, has been negative. You talked about maybe wanting some work right now. Chris Cuthbert, he has an idle period in his life, which is not normally the case. And so next week, we're going to catch up with him to hear about his great calls, and hopefully we're able to hear them again soon. You can hear us in this space every week, and please continue to like, favorite, share, and if you haven't yet, subscribe. This has been the Waggle Podcast. Thanks for listening.
The Waggle, presented by Sportclips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.